We're on with Dan Behrens this morning, the Senior Vice President in the Commercial Real Estate Group at Associated Bank. Dan, good morning. Welcome back.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me back.
I want to start our discussion this morning on the building material shortages we've been hearing about, not only in the regular markets, but specifically in the real estate market and some of the other building markets here in Chicago, commercial real estate. I saw a story in Cranes recently about one site that's under construction on Fulton Street in the 1000 block of West Fulton. And there's a picture of the site here where everything is just sort of waiting. And the person who's in charge of this says that they've been told 8 weeks of delay because the drywall suppliers can't find what they need for that. Is this a story that's being repeated throughout the Chicago area?
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. This is kind of the worry of the moment right now. Obviously, we had the pandemic last year was kind of everyone's main concern, and then what's going to happen when we reopen? And now I think it's the main concern, especially in the real estate market, commercial real estate market, is material costs, price overruns, people building in contingencies for their budgets to account for delays, and just a higher material costs all around. It's kind of a scary situation because we don't really know how long these delays are going to last, or what the price, how the prices are going to shake out for materials for these construction projects. But it's certainly that I've felt doing business, and we've had a number of developers approach us saying, "Hey, we're not starting construction yet. Are you okay with that? Can we hold off on breaking ground?" I think there's been some decrease in the pricing costs recently, meaning in the last, call it, since the start of the first quarter. And, some developers are saying, let's push it off until, early next year. If we could start in early 2022, that'd be ideal. I think people are expecting more of the price decompression later on this year. So hopefully we're kind of past the peak of these kind of outlandish prices for drywall, wood, sheet metal, really all building supplies. So hopefully we're past the worst of it, and people's budgets and contingencies haven't been completely eaten up.
Yeah, and eaten up in a big way in some cases. You mentioned some of the different supplies there. Copper for plumbing, sheet metal for heating, cooling systems, wire for light fixtures, all have jumped by at least 20% since January, at least according to one analysis. Dan, contractors normally try to account for all of this stuff, but this high fluctuating cost of materials must be really making it harder for them to do that.
It is. It's really difficult for them. You have these, general contractors have estimators on the front end of, while they're bidding these projects out. And, if they bid, like the building you mentioned on the 1000 block of West Fulton, if they build that, it's under construction now, they probably bid that job, I'd call it a year and a half to 2 years ago. It's really difficult for an estimator of a general contracting company to forecast what's going to happen with material prices. And certainly nobody 2.5 years ago or a year and a half ago would have expected, the price of steel and the price of lumber to increase anywhere from 20 to, some people are saying 200%. So, that's why a lot of or all projects have contingencies included. Obviously, a lot of construction projects have cost overruns, but you want to make sure that there's, enough cost savings in a different line item in their budget to account for all the increases in the material costs.
So talk to us a little bit about the impact of this, the real world impact. Obviously, part of that is the cost that we've been discussing here. But are we talking about projects that are going to be delayed considerably, or projects that might be canceled, projects that are going to be, so far down the line that maybe something's going to have to be changed with the planning?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say now. I mean, I don't think if you have a project that's going midstream right now, you're not going to want to stop the project. You don't want to, mothball the project or at least delay it, let's call it 90 days. It's that much more difficult to start it back up, get the subs back on site and get working. So I think the projects that are already under construction, or at least the majority of the way under construction, will continue. And, like I said earlier, they're going to have to find some fluff in their budget, where they'll be able to reallocate to make up for the cost overruns in other parts of the budget. For the projects that haven't started, I think they're in a pretty good position now where, hopefully they have lenders or equity investors who are accommodating enough to hold off on construction starts because, you know, until prices normalize. You know, but I think the prices, the projects that are just getting off the ground or that are in the process of bidding now, they're certainly not going to be what the developer or landlord had originally envisioned, may not have the same returns. You know, I know I've seen a handful of deals where I've talked to my developers and you know, they said, you know, the cost of whatever the material, steel, concrete, whatever it was, you know, let's call it $10,000 2020. It's now, you know, it was $40,000 at the start of mid 2021. Now it's, you know, $80,000 to $100,000. So, I mean, the price differences are just, it's astronomical, and the cost overruns are going to happen. And it just doesn't depend on how strong the general contractor is and their material suppliers are, that if they can continue to keep the projects on track.
Yeah, and we've also been hearing a lot about labor issues with, you know, work places having a hard time finding employees. But this supply issue is also having an impact on that, right? Because if you have a construction site like we've been talking about and you don't have the work or the materials to get it going, you probably have workers who've been idled.
Yeah, and the workers idling is the worst part. I mean, because then they're going to move on to the next job for the other developer who says, I don't have the luxury of waiting. I mean, I need to get started on construction. So if someone does decide to idle a project, when they decide to kick that back on, they may be, you know, they might say, hey, we're going to idle this project for 90 days. When they're ready in 3 months from now, all of their subs may be on to different projects, and that 90-day idle might turn into 180 days. So it's really, it's a difficult situation that's going to, you know, kind of reverberate around the industry, the construction industry and the development, commercial real estate industry. You know, hopefully most of that effect has already taken place. And, you know, hopefully there's a normalization as 2022 gets into the second half.
Dan,
I'm sorry, 2021 gets into the second half.
Dan, I saw an interesting story about retail sales, local retail sales poised to rise 6% this year. Obviously, this comes after a rough 2020 because of the pandemic. A couple of the retail corridors in Chicago are trying to reimagine themselves and take advantage of this. I'm specifically referring to the Damon Avenue corridor, the Southport Avenue corridor, among others, Armitage Avenue corridor. Talk to us a little bit about what these stores along those areas are doing to sort of capitalize on all of that.
You know, as I think about this more, Steve, I kind of picture this, at least in my mind, is more of Chicago supporting Chicago. You know, I know I've been eager to get out, and I've told you on numerous occasions, I've been eager to get out once the stay-at-home orders have been lifting. And I think people are more eager to spend money. People are more eager to support the local restaurants, the local businesses. So I think people are going to want to, you know, they've spent a year and a half ordering clothes, shoes, dinners online and having things delivered to their house. I think people want to get out. People want to socialize. People want to support the local businesses because they saw, you know, if the businesses were able to survive last year, you know, they were hurting. They were hurting bad. And I think the people in Chicago want to support the, you know, certainly locally grown independent businesses around the city and the restaurants around the city to ensure that they don't close. You know, people were given a glimpse in of what can happen if these businesses go away last year. And I don't think anyone liked that look of what the city would look like. So I think people are eager to get back out. I mean, particularly on the shopping corridors. I mean, me for, you know, I live in the West Loop by Fulton Market, and the foot traffic has been amazing. You know, the uptick just in the last few months has been dramatic. I mean, you know, the difficulty, I'm sure people have realized this around the city, difficulty getting restaurant reservations now, it's hard. And it's unfortunately, it's positive, unfortunately for me, because I can't get a reservation in some of the restaurants I wanted to go to, but it's positive for the restaurants because hopefully they're going to be able to stay open. And I think people want to go out to the Damon's and Armitage and Southport and support their local businesses. I think you know, Damon might be having a more difficult time. I think in the early call 2010s, when, you know, Damon really started to kind of emerge, you know, it was a kind of a gritty neighborhood, cool shopping destination. And some of that popularity has kind of really pushed rents. I think rents on Damon are really expensive. not necessarily like the Oak Street cost, but certainly for an outlying neighborhood, I think the rents in around Damon are among the tops in the city. So the difficulty is you're going to lose some of that independent retail vibe that made the neighborhood cool in the first place, and you have more of the national brands or international brands that are coming into the neighborhood. That may be kind of why Damon Avenue's vacancy rate has started to spike a little bit. I think people want to support small local Chicago-based businesses, maybe over a national brand where they think, hey, Lululemon, they can survive this downturn. They're not going to have that bad of an outcome. As the recovery starts to take off, and I think people are going to want to support more of the Chicago-based businesses.
There's an interesting trend, too, developing with some of these stores. It is the digital-first retailers, as they're being called, that have become more brick-and-mortar. One of the examples that I saw is the Warby Parker. It's this eyeglass brand that started online. I'm sure people are aware of this, where you go online and you buy your glasses, but they've opened an in-store shop up on Damon. And that's sort of a trend where, you know, we think of these online retailers that are suddenly returning to brick and mortar in some way.
Yeah, I think online brands are going to, they realize the importance of a brick and mortar presence. There is becoming fewer and fewer where you see 100% online stores now. I mean, even Amazon, who's always been, everyone thought the internet and e-commerce is going to kill traditional retail, but I think the e-commerce retailers are starting to realize, hey, brick and mortar is a really good way to actually capture foot traffic and capture more sales. So there's always going to be a need for traditional brick and mortar retail, and I think online retailers are starting to understand that and have been understanding it. I think Warby Parker has probably five or six different locations around the city. There's really no nothing like going into a store, trying on, in the Warby Parker example, mm-hmm. trying on a pair of sunglasses or a pair of glasses that, are they going to fit your face, instead of ordering seven or eight different pairs and having to return all those. I think retailers are starting to understand, if they have a physical presence, if someone orders seven pairs of glasses online and they don't want to pay for the return shipping for seven pairs of glasses, they can just walk into the store and do the return there. So there's definitely value of having a retail presence, a physical presence, versus just having an e-commerce presence.
I'm going to move on to something else here, but on the same theme of sort of reimagining. I know some companies are getting creative in how they're utilizing vacant commercial real estate spaces, and one of the examples I'd like to talk about is the Motorola plant, the old Motorola plant, that is being turned into an entertainment office and housing complex. Talk to us a little bit about this, rethinking old ideas.
Yeah, the Motorola campus out in suburban Schaumburg, I mean, I think this is an excellent use of all that space. I think it was 300 plus acres. It's a huge amount of space, enough to accommodate multiple buildings. And I think what they're doing is smart. They're generating interest in a suburb that is one traditionally retail, and they're trying to bring probably a younger generation out to the suburbs. I think the city's having a hard time keeping residents in the population. People are moving out to the suburbs, and in a village like Schaumburg is going to be able to capitalize on that by having this entertainment district. They have a Topgolf. There's office buildings that are opening in the retail destination that Schaumburg is. It's a smart use of an absolutely huge amount of land. I mean, with that much space, they can create these districts that are kind of villages within a village to really draw some interest into Schaumburg or wherever. These large corporate campuses, I think of the early 80s, that was kind of the model, was leaving the city, going out to these sprawling campuses where your workers have a little city among themselves. That has obviously shifted in the early 2000s. People were returning to downtowns, but now developers and even these former companies need to figure out what they're going to do with all this space. And kind of a master plan mini community is a smart use of that space in a way to bring kind of a 24-hour destination to these areas. Live, work, and play is kind of what everyone wants to do in kind of a master plan community like this.
Yeah, and as an added bonus, part of the plan is to create this data center, a solar-powered data center that's going to create some good-paying jobs, good-paying permanent jobs.
Right. So this is the former Motorola facility in Harvard. Harvard doesn't have the luxury of Schaumburg. Harvard is, what I'd call kind of in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you're not close to expressways. You're not close to major cities. You're 2 hours outside of the city. And if they can convert this, I think it's 1.3 million square feet into a data center, that'd be a huge win, not just for, the cloud computing or the computing power that it would, generate this facility, but also the village of Harvard itself. And if they can employ some of the local workforce there, it's a win all around. And this would be a huge win just to basically repurpose a 1.3 million square feet of just crumbling real estate right now.
Right. Things are looking up, Dan. It sounds very positive. Good conversation as always. How can people get over you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Yeah, sure, Steve. They always call my office phone, 312-544-4657, or my email, daniel.behrens@associatedbank.com.
All right, Dan. Thank you for being with us today. We'll see you next time.
You bet, Steve. Looking forward to it.